I think the North Koreans are trying to play a game here where they've taken a number of steps, most of which didn't really cost them anything.
The United States and South Korea try to keep the Trump-Kim summit on track. It's Tuesday, May 22nd. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, ozone depletion from a specific Asian location. A Pakistani exchange student is laid to rest. A Tibetan artist's universe in sand. Music from real stars. It's all on today's VOA Asia. South Korean President Moon Jae-in will meet later today with U.S. President Donald Trump in preparation for the upcoming U.S.-North Korea nuclear summit to be held in Singapore June 12th. The two leaders spoke by telephone Sunday for about 20 minutes. The conversation took place after the North threatened to cancel the planned meeting over joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises and demands for its unilateral nuclear disarmament. Robert Manning is a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council in Washington. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty Pyongyang's threat underscores the mutual deep distrust that lingers despite this year's apparent thaw.
Part of it is kind of pre-negotiating posturing to try to gain leverage. I think the North Koreans are trying to get an upper hand on President Moon's administration. That's not clear to me why they suddenly made this demand. It may be that there were some references in South Korea about defectors, and this is sort of their way of trying to establish some sort of equivalence.
Could it possibly be to divide South Korean public opinion?
I think you already have a divided public opinion in South Korea. You have a leftist government that sees North Korea more as a partner than a threat, and you have a lot of conservatives in North Korea who are very hostile to North Korea. And so the North Koreans are playing into that. For President Moon, he's got to demonstrate results. Since the summit, his popularity has gone pretty much straight up. But if there's no follow-through, if this process doesn't start producing results, it will slip back the other way.
Is there any daylight between the South Korean and U.S. positions?
Yes, I think you saw that the South Koreans were concerned about the question of B-52s involved in the exercise. I think that when there was a summit between Moon and Kim Jong-un, and they were told by the North Koreans that they understood that the U.S. and South Korea had to do exercises. But I think there was some reference at that point to hoping that there would not be strategic weapons involved. As you know, B-52s are nuclear capable. That may have been one reason why the North Koreans reacted. They obviously knew that there were exercises planned. They happen every year. There's nothing particularly unusual. I think the North Koreans are trying to play a game here where they've taken a number of steps, most of which didn't really cost them anything. They claim to have completed their nuclear and testing program, so suspending missile and nuclear tests was not really a sacrifice. And in terms of the nuclear test site they're destroying, there's a lot of evidence that suggests if they would have done one more test, the whole thing would have caved in.
North Korea on Sunday stressed the importance of its dismantling of the Punggye-ri nuclear test site this week, calling it a very meaningful and significant measure undertaken voluntarily to achieve the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Pyongyang announced its intention to take down the site in the presence of international journalists between Wednesday and Friday. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. Inter-Korea relations hit impasse over military drills and defectors. China puts its own spin on agreement to reduce trade deficit. Sri Lanka storms and landslides kill five, leave 1,000 displaced. China and Vietnam use tourism to spar over maritime sovereignty. Stars urge Indonesia to ban brutal trade in dog and cat meat. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. You'll also find them on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. something strange is happening with a now-banned chemical that eats away at the Earth's protective ozone layer. Scientists say there's more of it, not less, going into the atmosphere, and they don't know where it's coming from. When a hole in the ozone formed over Antarctica, countries around the world in 1987 agreed to phase out several types of ozone-depleting chemicals called chlorofluorocarbons. The production of CFCs was banned, emissions fell, and the hole slowly shrank. But starting in 2013, emissions of the second most common kind started rising. That's according to a study in Wednesday's journal Nature. The chemical, called CFC-11, also known as Freon, was used for making foam, degreasing stains, and for refrigeration. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with the author of the report. Steve Monska, a research scientist at the U.S. government's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Boulder, Colorado, told him about what is happening and perhaps where it's happening.
CFC-11 concentrations are decreasing in the atmosphere, and they continue to decrease, just not as fast as they had been. What has increased are emissions, and we derive rates of global emissions based on the concentration measurements we make in the atmosphere.
CFC, as I was growing up, was a good thing. This is what people used in air conditioning and refrigeration and all kinds of other products and things like that.
Yes, CFCs were wonder chemicals. They replaced flammable refrigerants and things like that, or toxic refrigerants, so that you didn't have any longer a toxic chemical in your kitchen. But unfortunately, CFCs get mixed and lofted in the atmosphere up into the upper atmosphere or stratosphere, where they get photolyzed, in other words, blown apart by high-energy UV radiation. And the products of that photolysis, chlorine and bromine atoms, react with ozone. And that ozone in the stratosphere is important because it filters damaging high-energy ultraviolet radiation from reaching the Earth's surface.
So what has caused this change that you have noticed? But where is it coming from?
We can look at our measurements, and they seem to tell us, they point to this increased emission apparently coming from the region of Eastern Asia.
You can't be any more specific than that?
The closest site we make measurements at to Eastern Asia is Hawaii, which is quite a ways away. So with uncertainty in our understanding of how the winds blow and wind direction from Asia to Hawaii kind of prevents us from further focusing in on where that emission actually is. But, you know, there are measurements of these chemicals made in Eastern Asia, and ultimately, the next step I hope that those folks will take, the scientists there, is to study their measurements and use them to help pinpoint this source.
What would contribute to this kind of a finding? What kind of event, what kind of manufacturing, whatever it might be, what could contribute to that?
Couple things to consider. There's lots of CFC-11 contained in foams currently. And if those products or foams were being degraded and recycled or ground up at an increased rate at a certain location, that would lead to increased emissions. The other thing is that there's a lot of chemical manufacturing around the world. The chlorination and fluorination of methanes to produce things we use every day, things like polyvinyl chloride or PVC tubing, things like Teflon, other chemicals like that. And that process of fluorinating and chlorinating methane could produce CFC-11. So maybe it's some inadvertent production related to that.
How much danger is this to the world's population?
You know, I think we're fortunate that our measurement capabilities and the state of the global atmospheric monitoring system is pretty good, so that we've been able to detect this emission increase before it's really become a serious problem. So this increased emission isn't really going to cause a substantial amount of ozone depletion. The problem would be if it were to continue into the future. I liken it to the check engine light going on in my car. Something's going on, and if we want to keep moving down the path that we hope to move on, we might stop and check under the hood here before the situation gets worse.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Steve Monska, a research scientist at the U.S. government's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Boulder, Colorado. Happening now in Asia, officials in Sri Lanka say heavy rain and lightning strikes have left at least 5 people dead and displaced more than 1,000. Hundreds of army troops deployed to carry out relief work and rescue operations as heavy rains caused flash floods in many parts of the country. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Mourners packed a mosque in Stafford, Texas, about 59 kilometers away from the mass school shooting Friday that killed 10 people. One of the victims was a Pakistani exchange student who wanted to learn about the American culture and share her own. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from her funeral.
This is more than an afternoon prayer. It is a last goodbye to 17-year-old foreign exchange student Sabika Sheikh.
We did not have children. She was the first one who called us mom and dad. She was literally like a daughter to us.
Uzma Parveen was Sabika's first host mother in the United States. This photo from Sabika's Instagram feed shows a teenager excited about life in the United States. Parveen says Sabika had big dreams.
She wanted to be everyone, and the only regret that she wanted to be famous. Not like that. I don't want to see her picture on the TV like that. I don't want to see that she was one of the victims.
Attending this funeral is Jerry Manlove, the coordinator of the exchange program. She remembers texting Sabika the day of the shooting and never getting a response.
She and two other students and a teacher hid in the classroom. They hid. They found a closet, but the boy found them.
If anybody listens to me, I have only one appeal. Please do something. No children should be taken away from parents. It hurts. Believe me, it hurts. One metal detector could have saved her. Just one.
Friends say Sabika was looking forward to going home in a few weeks at the end of Ramadan. Her second host family attended and spoke at the funeral.
When she started Ramadan and started fasting, my family did that with her because we did things together.
She was the most beautiful, loving person I've ever met.
The families and friends touched by Sabika say knowing her has changed their lives permanently. For that, they are thankful to her parents in Pakistan.
Thank you for sharing such a wonderful daughter with us, with me and Rashid. Thank you so much. We are with you in your grief. We are not going to be the same people anymore.
They say Sabika may be gone, but her love will always be with them. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Stafford, Texas.
Coming up, the universe in grains of sand. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA programs. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia, Afghan officials say unidentified insurgents have killed 5 mine disposal technicians and kidnapped one of the workers in southern Kandahar province. A spokesman for the provincial police chief said the miners were clearing an area for the multi-billion dollar Tapi pipeline project. Read and see more of all of our stories at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, over the centuries, Tibetan monks have created mandalas, fanciful images of the universe with quite complexity. Losung Samten is one of them. The American scholar and artist is best known for creating mandalas in colored sand for the public and sharing messages of healing and peace. VOA's June So caught up with him in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Molly McKitterick narrates.
When I was a teenager,
age of 17, I have a privilege to enter to the Houstonist Dalai Lama's monastery in India. I have been studying at Sand Mandala ever since then, so it's a long time.
Painstakingly layering grains of colored sand, Losang Somten is creating the Mandala of Compassion, or unconditional love, over a week in the gallery of the Philadelphia Folklore Project.
What I'm doing now in the Philadelphia Folklore Project is the center of the mandala. But if let's say we will decide to do a whole mandala of compassion, at least it may going to take us 3 weeks to complete.
When Somten created a sand mandala at the American Museum of History in New York in 1988, it was the first time the ancient ritual art was seen outside of monasteries. Since then, Somten has made sand mandalas in museums, galleries, and universities across the U.S. and many parts of the world.
These are uniquely designed for many years. So passing through artists, to another artist, to another artist, another artist, another artist. So the color has a meaning, shape have a different meanings. So I have not my design. It didn't came out of my own idea.
Somten was born in Tibet. When he was a young boy, his family escaped to Nepal, fleeing Chinese communist control of his country. They lived in a refugee camp for years.
The winter of 1959. Crossed the Mount Everest. It took us to 2 months to cross. You cannot travel during the day. And so scared. And not enough food, not enough clothes. I was age of 5. I seen him, unbelievable dead bodies, people dying without food. I become a monk age of 11. And when I was in school, refugee school.
Somten left monastic life in 1995 and became the spiritual director at the Tibetan Buddhist Center of Philadelphia. He says the patience of the creative process can lead observers to find calm determination within themselves.
When I'm doing this mandala at the universities and in the schools, many kids came to me. When I saw Yung doing a Zen mandala, that helped me so much to finish my education. Patience. Well, I have a lot of stories.
When a sand mandala creation is completed, a dismantling ceremony follows. Somten often invites children to participate in the ceremony.
Dismantle have many different reasons. One thing is that dismantle is a beauty, whatever we see as a beauty on the earth, never be as a less as a beauty and impermanent. Impermanent comes and goes.
I think it's powerful to see something so beautiful created and then taken apart and to be done in a community with a group of people of different ages. I just think it's an important type of practice.
For producer June So, I'm Molly McKitterick, VOA News, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
This news alert from VOA Asia, international stars of acting, music, and sports have urged Indonesia's president to ban what they say is a brutal trade in dog and cat meat for human consumption. The appeal comes after animal cruelty was exposed in markets on the island of Sulawesi. Top stories and features come to light every day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a sick toddler is thriving thanks to his father's kidney. VOA Steve Barragona says he's also doing well thanks to practice surgery using 3D printed organs.
3-year-old Dexter Clark was born with bad kidneys. His father, Brendan, says the boy was constantly sick.
When he was 1 year old, we had to have a procedure to give him a gastrostomy so he could be fed through a tube because he threw up so much.
A kidney transplant would change Dexter's life. His father's matched, but Brendan's kidney was bigger than average, which would complicate surgery. So doctors at Guy's and St. Thomas NHS Foundation Trust 3D printed copies of Brendan's and Dexter's organs. Practicing on the replica organs allows doctors to spot potential problems before the actual operation begins, says transplant surgeon Nikos Kassaris.
The components are flexible, so you can manipulate them to simulate the steps of the operation as well.
Technology company Stratasys developed the 3D organ printer. These practice organs can help cut the cost of healthcare, says company vice president Phil Reeves.
If we can take an hour or 2 hours off a procedure, if we can reduce the amount of time in that theater, reduce the amount of recovery time, the amount of beds being taken up, all of that compounded really drives the economic argument for where 3D printing helps the health service.
What's inside?
Daddy's kidney.
Yeah.
And helps a 3-year-old boy and his family lead a normal life. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Interstellar space is mostly vacuum, so there's no medium that can carry sound. In other words, space is totally silent. But astronomers have often associated the movement of heavenly bodies with music. And with the help of modern technology, VOA's George Puditch says one astronomer has actually turned the signals from space into a funky tune.
Documentary and feature film producers often give space a sinister-sounding electronic background. But University of Massachusetts astronomy research professor Mark Heyer says the universe, or more precisely our galaxy, the Milky Way, sounds more like this.
An idea that I had for a long time, and only recently has some of the technology came about that somebody like me could access that and turn my algorithm, actually, which turns the velocities into notes, but then I want to be able to play that back, and that technology that has been out recently afforded me the path to do that.
The visible light coming from distant worlds carries a lot of information that can be analyzed with a spectroscope. Heyer developed a computer program or algorithm to convert the movement of large clouds of atoms and molecules of different elements and compounds into music.
I take the spectrum and I essentially mathematically resample that to a musical scale, and that gives that spectrum, which is inherently atonal, it gives a tonality. And that's what really is a key step to make it sound nice.
Heyer randomly assigned different musical instruments to different gases, forming a combo consisting of a saxophone, a piano, an upright bass, and some percussion woodblocks. For instance, a certain atomic gas, which fills much of the space between the stars, is represented by the upright bass.
So it gives you that driving pulse, I think, that sort of drives the music forward. And the woodblock sort of do that as well.
After some experimenting, Heyer decided to use the pentatonic minor blues scale.
I've been experimenting with the algorithm, and I had major scales and simple minor scales. But when I first, played, a little segment of just one of the instruments, it sounded like that could be a very nice blues or jazzy sound to it. And so then I recrafted the algorithm so it could transform the data into a musical blues scale.
Heyer says he was surprised when he realized for the first time that the rotation of our galaxy contains a rhythm, and the funky blues seemed to fit perfectly. George Puditch, VOA News.
And for us old-timers, we thought space music came from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Look it up if you haven't seen it. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find our program online on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our program. You can also stream it each and every day on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. And if you happen to be in Asia, many great radio stations carry our program, like DZUP, 1602 AM Radio at the University of the Philippines in Diliman, Quezon City, Thanks to everyone there listening. Thanks to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Zeynep Abdel-Rahman, our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.